Welcome, everybody, to the Over Under podcast, where myself, Jerry Daniels, chats with his friends, Tim and Sarah Reichelt from Australia.
Hello, Jerry. How are you doing?
I'm doing
fine.
Hi,
Jerry.
Hey, guys. Well, today's the day we talk about Elon Musk and his endeavors, his projects that he's working on. Many people have declared him the Steve Jobs of the modern era. So let's talk about the man, who he is. It is pronounced Elon Musk. I looked it up. I thought maybe it's Elon, you know, in the country he comes from or something like that. But he's a South African / Canadian / American. Interesting fellow. Been married 3 times to 2 women. I always find that interesting.
Yes, he's a very interesting chap. His mother was Canadian. I was thinking about this podcast, and I thought we probably shouldn't dwell too long on the things that people can pick up by reading his Wikipedia page, which I've just done, and it's extremely interesting. He's a very interesting chap.
Yeah, and I've never read it. I never read it until today, right?
Yeah, well, he's a fascinating chap. Sarah had a good idea that we might chop this podcast into 3 bits because he's got 3 main angles. One is his cars, the Tesla, and a second is the solar city, the solar panels and batteries. And the third is the SpaceX, his the rockets. So I thought that was a good idea. But just before we kick off, I thought I was reading his Wikipedia page, and I was thinking of something else that I'd heard, which is that if you look at the 3 companies, in each company, he's attempting a what you might call a disruptive technology, and they're each in industries where there are powerful players that he is attempting to disrupt. And so in 3 different areas, he is making very powerful enemies. And the result is that there's a lot of disinformation online, and there's a lot of people with a lot of reason to bad mouth, as the Irish would say, Mr. Musk. And so it's worth bearing in mind that when you read about him and see things, you should keep an open mind, because there are a lot of people with a lot of whose jobs depend on Elon Musk not succeeding. So it's just worth remembering that. I thought I would monopolizing the conversation there.
No. You've done good. Sarah, take what do you got there? Oh, where'd Sarah go?
I don't know. She's downstairs. She's gone silent. Okay,
oh.
Now she's muted. You're there, Sarah.
I'm here. Yeah, I just toggled my mute on and off again. Hopefully you can hear me now.
Yes, we can hear you now.
Yes, okay.
Okay,
yes.
Well, with the cars, we are software people. We like good hardware, but we are more involved in producing software. And to me, it's fascinating that you can have a car, sitting outside your house, and when you get in to drive it the next morning, it's had a completely new operating system, and it will go faster, or it will corner differently, or it will avoid hazards differently. I think that's just amazing from a purely computer software point of view.
Now, I'm also, I should just add one more thing, which is that if it wasn't already obvious, I'm a huge Elon Musk fan, and I was examining my opinions and thinking, well, what do I have to say that's not... doesn't come over as mindless enthusiasm, and I could actually only come up with one or two things, one of which is to do with the space program, which we'll get to. And the other is probably he's a fairly difficult guy to be married to, but my opinion is that that's none of my business, and he seems to be a nice enough bloke. But as for the cars, and Sarah's point, it seems to me that his cars, he started off trying to put together an electric car from components that he could source and have supplied in California and just put them together as a sort of sports car. But as the years have rolled by, he then decided that having done that with that first car, he would then try and make a luxury sedan. It was the only thing that made commercial sense, according to him. And that's the Model S, which is what is it? It's about 100. Is it 80,000 US or 110,000 US or something? It's about 150,000 in Australia, and it's a very nice vehicle. Then he's made an SUV, and he's in the process of putting together the factory to make the somewhat more affordable car. Still not cheap. I don't think a car that's over $30,000 can be considered cheap, but it's significantly less. I mean, about a third the price of the Model S. So what's coming along very quickly is the software that drives these vehicles, in a sense, and we've gone from sort of cruise control a few years ago. We've catapulted forward thanks to Elon Musk and also other manufacturers like Mercedes-Benz, I know, have systems, and in fact most of them now have are rapidly developing systems, I think, because that is to say self-driving systems, I think, because they see an enormous threat from self-driving cars in the future. I think inside a decade, all cars will be expected to be able to be given an instruction and go from A to B, as long as the roads are freeways or well-developed roads. I think on a dirt track, you're still going to be on your own. But the software side and the sensors on the cars, radar, imaging, is going ahead with tremendous speed. And the implications are pretty clear now that everybody's going to have to do that. How about I stop talking for a second and somebody else have a go?
Well, what I was thinking was when we started this, you said he was disrupting industries. And I think that's very good. I think that's a very good description of what he's done with the car market. Before he came along, there was no real concept of there being a commercially available car that could do what the Tesla does in terms of both the power, battery power, the electrical power, and the sensors to make it more self-driving. And he has come along and he's shaken up the industry. And now everybody has realized they have to do the same. BMW, Mercedes, the Japanese companies, the Korean companies, they're all following suit now, and we're seeing a great burst in the number of electric cars that are coming out. I think BMW has said they're going to stop making petrol engines in 2020, which is great. And so I think you need somebody like him to come into an established industry, much the same as Apple came into the phone industry. And they shake everything up and make everybody realize that they can do other stuff. And the other thing he disrupted, of course, with the cars is the distribution mechanism, which I believe, Jerry, you can probably fill us in on this one. I think that caused a lot of legal problems in the states, didn't it, in various states, with his lack of in-state agents.
Well, yes, it did. There's a pretty firmly established dealership model that all the other car companies used. And when he came in and with his model, it really challenged them and would have put a lot of people out of business slash work. So, yeah, the states that in particular like to protect their jobs, which these days is getting to be more and more of them, they kind of retrench, they go backwards, they try to block, they try to keep these things from happening. So, yeah, he ran into a lot of that. And, you know, he did the same thing with PayPal, too, of course. There were a lot of players who did not want to see PayPal succeed, and a lot of people wanted to stop them. So, you know, he had been through this little exercise of his before, and I think, you know, all this stuff started in 2003, so this is well before the iPhone. But so I think a lot of this stuff was greatly influenced by the work Apple did with factories and distribution and cutting deals and making disruptive business models. And his business model, in addition to the technology of the car itself, is definitely a disruption. You're absolutely correct about that, Sarah.
Yes, he's fighting in various states. It's interesting that it strikes me that the distribution mechanism is a very free. America prides itself on its free enterprise, and rightly so. And yet he's building cars in the U.S. and he simply wishes to sell them directly to customers. And so it's which I think, because that's it's fundamentally very difficult to object to that that model. I think that's why he is in the long run winning these battles, because he's simply saying that the old system that was developed in the 20s and 30s to support these vehicles makes less sense now and for his vehicles. The Apple, yes, I'm sure he was looking at Apple and its disruption as well, as you say, Jerry. Okay, well, that's the cars. Do you think we should move on?
Yeah, it'll tie back. I think as you go forward, they all loop together. Well, we'll talk a little about space. Is that our second one?
Let's do the solar city,
okay.
And the Tesla batteries. Now, Sarah
Fair
and
enough.
I are particularly interested in this because we're going to do it ourselves sometime in the next year or two. And we come from a particularly sunny spot. So as you stand in the midday sun with immense amounts of energy beating down on your head, it seems a very strong argument for saying we should be gathering this and using it. So solar power is pretty popular in Australia.
And the big problem for solar power in our part of the world is we're subtropical, so a bit south of, or a bit out of the tropic zone. But basically, the sun goes down at 6 p.m. and comes up at 6 a.m. pretty much all year round, varying by sort of half an hour. It means that when most people are using their power, basically cooking dinner, watching TV, playing computer after work, there's no sun. So a lot of people got solar power and realized that it wasn't actually supplying their houses when they were needing to use power. And that's the problem that Tesla's Powerwall is solving.
Well, let's talk about
one.
We plan to get one.
Oh, you guys are going to get a power panel for your garage or whatever?
Yeah, we plan to. I mean, we just put it not even in the garage. We just stick it outside on the wall, have solar panels on the roof. We would not. We're not looking at replacing our roof, so we would not go for his solar roof tiles, which I think are a fascinating technology, and I think they'll really change the way people build houses. But we will get solar panels put on the roof, and we will get them connected up to a power wall so that we can draw on the solar power 24 hours a day.
Cool. Now, one of the things about those, I think there's some advantage of not attaching them to the roof, because I think there's going to be servo mechanics that will angle those things properly at the sun so you get the maximum absorption of sunlight. So I think that's probably a good move. I'm in favor of that.
I think some very fancy installations do have those servos, as you say, but most of the installations you see around here, they just put on the section of the roof, in our case, the north-facing section, that gets the majority of the sunlight through the day. And sometimes if the roof is not tilted in the right way, you'll see they have legs to tilt them. But I think the servos are a whole new level of expense that very few installations go for.
Not today, but in the future they will. One thing for sure, you're not going to be able to tilt your entire roof.
that's probably true.
Well, so I think you're set up for the future, is my point.
Yeah, we have a massive surplus of sunshine. So if you just put up a couple more panels, you avoid the whole complexity of electromechanical devices and the maintenance and difficulties that can come with that. It's very simple just to have enough panels sitting there to provide you with the power you want. And if they're collecting all day and pumping it into the power wall, then one should be good. The power wall, by the way, is now in version 2 and it's dramatically improved. For about the same price, you get double the storage. So that was quite an impressive boost that they got just a couple of months ago.
Now, are he selling those right now as we speak?
Don't know. I think
not,
so.
Not the tiles, but yes, the power walls. Certainly, you can buy them. The Model 2 power walls. You can buy them here in Australia.
Okay. And now he acquired SolarCity. That was his brother's startup, I believe.
Now I didn't know it was his brother, but yes, he has. Just within the last couple of weeks, the merger between Tesla and SolarCity has been approved, hasn't it? Isn't that the way it went?
Yeah. Oh, his cousin, one of his cousins. Co-founded in 2006 by one of his cousins, and he's the largest shareholder in it right now. That's what it says in
and they're building, they're building the Gigafactory.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that, well, from our point of view, we think if you watch his presentation for the Powerwall, the introduction to it, it was fairly persuasive in terms of the logic of solar panels and battery storage. Interestingly, just as a side note, when we get our system, we'll probably get a separate system for the hot water, just a separate solar panel. Those have been around for many years in Australia, where they're very effective. And of course, because you heat the water and you have a storage tank for the hot water that it circulates through, the storage tank is acting like the battery. The new batteries act for solar panels. The problem, as usual, was you get this energy free during the day and you need some way to store it so that it's useful at other times. Well, the hot water systems had that storage all the time just by keeping the hot water in a tank. Okay, do we go on to the space now?
Well, yes, let's go on to space. Although I'm curious that, Jerry, you're in Texas, which also has lots of sun.
Yes.
What's the, you know, are there lots of solar panels around your area? Do new developments always get solar panels on the roofs? Are you planning on getting solar?
Yes, it's very popular here in Texas, as you might imagine. Wind is also very popular here, too. As you get a little farther south, we have, you know, huge wind farms. So they're harvesting more on a utility level as opposed to a dwelling level, lots of wind energy. But yeah, solar's very popular. We're not quite subtropic. Houston is subtropic, so we're a little farther north of that. And Houston's a, and rather Texas is a big state, the size of a lot of countries. So we don't have anything like you guys have in terms of sunshine. And our sun does, you know, the degree on the horizon does vary quite a bit. So we are one of those people who could profit from the servo motors on ours. And the house we're in now, we just moved recently. We're in an apartment in a house, and the owners of the house have put up a metal roof and has a water collection system. So they're very ecology minded, and we might say we have more of a water problem threatening us than an energy problem sometimes, it would seem. So yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if Troy and Mary do something like that with solar in the near future, in the next few years. And certainly the Powerwall is a big part of that, and all the stuff he's working on fits together nicely of these two that you've talked about. These are great synergy between these two companies.
Yeah, and of course, in this case, they're disrupting power companies and the oil industry. Talk about rustling feathers. It's no wonder that they feel back pressure. It's interesting to note that if we get a full solar system, we would still remain attached to the grid, and it's fair if you remain attached to the grid that the problem that the power companies complain of is if you're not buying any power from them, you should nevertheless, if you're attached to the grid for emergency supplies, you're going to help pay for maintaining the all this infrastructure that's that distributes it in the old-fashioned way. Doesn't seem unreasonable. So, however, I would say that where the real problem comes in is, I know in some states, was it Nevada? They were saying that if you go, some people were saying, all right, then we'll go off grid. We'll just have huge amounts of solar. We'll put in heaps of batteries and we'll be off grid. And the power companies were pushing the state to say, but you can't go off grid. You still have to pay because the power poles, you know, go into your area and for other people. And they were trying to push for, and in Florida too, I think, push for people nevertheless to be paying for the traditional infrastructure. So the battle is still being joined, and my sympathies are that if you choose to go off grid, then you should be able to go off grid, and then it's your own problem. What do you think?
I think you've got a point there. Here, part of the attractiveness of the model, and I don't know how realistic it is, that you will be able to sell your surplus energy back to the utility company and they'll broker it for you or whatever. I don't know how realistic that is, but that's the come on. I think that's one of the ways they sell solar.
Yeah, well, we used to have that here. In fact, the government, there was subsidies for people selling the power back, and the power companies paid quite a lot for it. But in the last year or so, the amount of money you get for the electricity you sell back into the system has been greatly reduced, and there's argument and discussion over why it has now been reduced, and what you believe depends exactly on how cynical you are. That is to say, there is some suggestion that the power companies have finally begun to realize that if everybody gets solar and Powerwall batteries, their life is going to become quite complicated. So nowadays in Australia, you get solar panels and power and the batteries and solar hot water for your own use. There's not a lot of money in selling the power back to the grid anymore.
Yeah, I would think there's a loss of every time you, depending upon the format that the electricity is in, there's loss, right? When you transport it, there's a 10% or whatever loss. If you convert from DC from alternating current to direct current, you lose. You know, when you store it in a battery, you lose. So every time you move this stuff around or change the type of electricity, there's a little tax that physics puts on you. So I think that came into play with this sell it back to the utilities company. And for me, just gut level and college physics tells me that, you know, that doesn't seem like a real model. That doesn't seem like something's really going to happen. You know, back in the 60s and even before, Buckminster Fuller's idea was to solve the storage problem would be that you get a transarctic line so that one side of the world that's in daytime could be generating electricity, even though they're at work and not using it. It could be used by the people on the other side of the globe while they're asleep. And so the typical Bucky answer to a problem that ignored politics and tundra and a bunch of other things. But it's the losses on that, to me, in my mind, and the cost of the infrastructure seem prohibitive. I like this individualistic model that you're espousing, Tim. I think that's more realistic, at least in the short term.
Yeah, well, actually, that's I hadn't heard that one. That's spectacular. I only knew Buckminster Fuller from his geodesic domes and interesting architectural things. I hadn't heard that. I hadn't heard that one for global power distribution. I seem to remember that back in the early days of power, was it Tesla pushing for DC distribution instead of AC? And DC worked better over the very long distances. Do they? I'm not very good on this, but I think that the idea of solar everywhere and batteries everywhere has echoes in the logic of the structure of the internet, actually, that it should be resistant to breakdown and so on. So I think it's the way things will go eventually.
I think you're right about the politics of that. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, let's move on to space. And I know this is a topic particularly dear to Tim's heart. And to my mind, Elon Musk's space plans have two aspects. And the first is his near-Earth stuff with his spaceships that are supplying the International Space Station and coming down to land in what seems to me to be an entirely unnatural manner, such as landing a pencil on its end, having threatened the air. And then there is perhaps what we might call his rather more far-fetched plans to go to Mars in very short order. But as regards his local stuff, he's really kind of taken over the business of supplying the ISS, hasn't he? I mean, at the moment, America has no government capability of supplying the ISS and certainly none of transporting astronauts to and from the ISS. But Musk is successfully supplying it, isn't he, Tim?
Yes. It's the US has systems for supplying the ISS, but not for they don't have an astronaut transporter. So it's the Russians doing that, and that's been the case for the last, whatever it is, 3 or 4 years since the last shuttle flew. And although I'm not American, I am pretty uncomfortable with that. I really feel that I was slightly shocked that America allowed that, the US allowed that to happen. And I look forward to, I'm hoping that in the near future we will have two private and one government means of getting people to and from the ISS and into low Earth orbit, up from zero at the moment. So SpaceX is is working towards being able to shift people, and they have their Dragon cargo freighter to go to the ISS. And there are other lots of people working on being able to carry astronauts. And of course, the NASA is working on its system. But the most impressive thing with SpaceX has been the reusable rocket to land the first stage back on a target with ever increasing accuracy, and the prospect that next year they will reuse one of those rockets. And so they seem to be careering forward with great speed, and because they're prepared to, because they're a privately owned company, really, Musk owns 58% or something of it, they don't have to answer to shareholders. And so as long as he can scrape together the money, it's clearly a setback to have, he's had, what, two vehicles explode. But that springs directly from the risks that they're taking and the speed with which they're advancing. It's easy to remember, especially if you go online and look for a few minutes, how many rockets the US had explode at the beginning of their development of their rocket systems. And the rocket that powers the Falcon is the most powerful rocket engine currently available. So it must be working to reasonably fine tolerances, although the last explosion appears to have been caused by the idea of having a liquid oxygen tank embedded inside another propellant tank, and the forces at work there got away from them, and the tank ruptured, and that caused the explosion. But they rapidly redesign, and they rapidly implement a new plan. The next flight is early January, and off they go. But I did say earlier that I had a criticism of Musk, and that is that he doesn't really have owning the majority of shares means that he doesn't really have anyone to answer to, and he is the head of the design team at SpaceX. He really knows his stuff, and so he plots out what they hope to do and when they hope to get it done by. And he doesn't tend to factor in gratuitous buffers and space for unforeseen circumstances. So he makes announcements like, the Red Dragon will go to Mars next year on the Falcon Heavy or something like that. And because that's the way his prediction plays out. And these predictions of his very seldom actually come to fruition on time. So he's pretty optimistic about how these things happen. But as I said, I'm very reluctant to criticize him for that, because essentially it's his money, and it requires, I think, a relentless optimism to take on very difficult tasks. If you think you're not going to do it, maybe you shouldn't be. Well, you probably won't succeed. We see this with a lot of overachievers, especially in sports. That you have to convince yourself that you're among the best in the world before you can be the best in the world. And if you are going to try and get to Mars, then part of that is saying, "Well, of course I can get to Mars. And here's how we're going to do it. So let's get started." So I fall into the Elon Musk once said that he would like to die on Mars, just not on impact. I like that line, and it's something I would be prepared to do myself, though the opportunity will never arise. But I completely agree with his philosophy concerning what he's trying to do. He has stated that everything he does, actually it's highly admirable that everything he does, all three of the things we've mentioned, fall heavily into the category of far-sighted attempts to improve the state of humanity. And Mars is, he stated, his ultimate goal. And hopefully, and I'm hoping that he can make serious progress before I drop off the twig, which I'm also hoping will be a little while yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Well,
yeah, he's the man. He's the man. Yeah, I think Elon Musk is the man.
I think we've decided that he is the man. And he's a disruptive person, and disruptive people are what make the big leaps forward, just like Steve Jobs. But we've gone way over our time. Jerry, have you got anything to say before we wrap up?
I'd hope that what we'd accomplish in this would be to get people thinking and reading and watching video and all kinds of stuff about the technologies and the companies and, of course, Elon Musk and the other people who are working in the areas he's working in to filter out the noise, as Tim pointed out, and find out what's real, what isn't. It's fascinating. And given, you know, the kind of news we're having in politics and other things these days, it's an area where I think there is a lot of hope and a lot of excitement. And we'll just have to see how this stuff goes. But, I'm glad he's around, certainly. And, I think people need heroes and stuff like that. And to the entrepreneur class and everything else, he's definitely in there. Everyone loves somebody who fights against the odds, and he definitely does.
Yep. Well,
okay.
I think it's
very
impressive to...
Go ahead.
Yep. Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, I think it's. I'm always impressed with somebody who is prepared to do something. It's rather than be passive and to do something good with good intentions. There's the most serious criticism you can find out there at the moment is that he's. He gets paid a lot of money, a lot of subsidies from the US government to do all the things that he's doing. And so I would just urge anybody listening to, before simply accepting that, read a lot more about it, because the exact circumstances are rather more complex. And if you look into it, you'll find that it's not as simple as some people are saying, and they have reasons for saying that. So. Anyway,
yep.
I better stop. So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, this was a good one. A lot of fun to talk about this stuff. You can find me on Twitter, Jerry Daniels. And Sarah, she's got a project she's talking about on Twitter a little bit. She might want to mention that.
Yes, on Twitter, I'm Trosware. And I'm looking for beta testers at the moment for my new project management software, which is called Work, an app for the Mac.
There you go. Okay.
And you'll find me sitting in the corner of the living room trying to learn the guitar.
All right, guys. Thanks for your time. And I will
talk
to
you next time.
All right.
Bye.